Time now for Western Michigan at Work, the program which brings you each week the story of one of the industries of Western Michigan and the people who work in it. This evening, we are to hear about the farmer and his problems. Here is your guide to Western Michigan at Work, Dr. Willis Dunbar.
Good evening. More people work on farms than in any other single industry in Western Michigan. In spring, we naturally think about the soil and all that it produces to fulfill our wants. So, I've invited our WKZO farm editor, Carl Collin, to join me at the microphone tonight in order to share with our listeners, in an informal conversation, the farm outlook in Western Michigan at the start of the planting season, 1949. Well, Carl, what's ahead for the farmers here in Michigan?
Well, Doctor, what's ahead of the farmers here in Michigan, as well as in the rest of the country, is a pretty tough question to answer. Certainly the answer to what's ahead is being and will continue to be affected by a good many changing factors.
Well, now, what do you mean by that?
Well, at the present time, production of farm products is geared up to a pretty high pitch. For the past 7 or 8 years, we've been able to consume, or get rid of, about all farmers in this country could possibly produce. In fact, during the war and up to the last year, we just couldn't produce enough of most farm products.
Well, I suppose that was because of the war.
Yeah, mostly. War has always make the need for food a lot greater, and especially when you have allies that need food pretty badly. Well, during the war, of course, we shipped tremendous quantities of food abroad, and since the war, we've continued to send huge supplies to areas that were devastated by the fighting over there. A lot of the area was ravaged, the soils were destroyed, and of course the manpower to raise the crops was destroyed too. Generally speaking, the means of raising food in Europe were destroyed by the war, and so it became the policy of this country to supply food and fiber, wool and cotton, to most of the countries in Western Europe and the southern and southeastern parts of Europe. We've done that through both private relief programs and through governmental plans such as the Marshall Plan. In other words, the demands for the things that farmers raise in this country have been violently abnormal. And farmers in this country have performed production miracles in their efforts to raise large crops.
Well, you know, Carl, we have all heard about these production miracles that the farmer has performed. But can you tell us just how much greater is our farm production in this country now than it was before the war, when this abnormal demand started?
Well, including the production of all food and fiber crops, about 35%. And that's a lot. 10 years ago, very few farmers or agricultural scientists would have predicted that we have been able to boost food production that much in such a short time.
There has been a great improvement in the type of seeds and the amount of machinery used in the last few years, hasn't there?
Well, now, those are two big factors which have contributed to greater food production. Look what's happened to corn yields since farmers started planting hybrid seed corn. Yield per acre has jumped anywhere from 30% to 35%, some cases quite a bit more. And now just about all of the corn planted in the Corn Belt, Iowa, Illinois, Nebraska, Missouri, Ohio, Michigan, and the rest of the commercial corn area, is planted to hybrid seed corn. A number of disease-resistant seeds have been developed by plant scientists. They're higher-producing seeds, too. And as a result, we get larger crops of wheat and oats and soybeans and all the rest of the crops right down the line.
Well, now, just what has hybrid corn done in the country? What's been the result of all this?
Well, as an example of what hybrid seed corn has done, for 70 years prior to 1937, the average per acre yield of corn here in the United States remained around 26 bushels. That's 26 bushels per acre. And then from 1937 to 1946, that stretch of 10 years, the average yield was increased to 31.5 bushels per acre. That doesn't seem like an awful lot, but you multiply that by the number of acres produced, and that amounts to a lot of corn. And then in 1948, the yield jumped to 42.7 bushels per acre.
My goodness, you mean in 2 years, from 46 to 48, the yield went from 31.5 to 42.7 bushels an acre?
Well, now, that has to be qualified a little bit. That 31.5 bushels per acre is the average for that 10-year period. So it might not represent the jump from 2 years.
Oh, I see.
Well, better cultural methods have helped push our farm yields higher, too. The soil conservation programs that the government has encouraged can take a bow for their part. The use of liming materials and fertilizers has jumped greatly. And such things as contour farming, strip cropping, terracing, use of sod waterways, and so forth. All these things, they've paid off plenty to the farmers who've used them.
You know, Carl, I've always enjoyed looking at the farm machinery that we see displayed at our county fairs. And every year there seems to be so many new gadgets and different kinds of equipment to help farmers in their work.
You know, Doctor, there's been pretty much of a mechanical revolution on farms during the last 10 to 15 years. Mechanically powered equipment has boosted production because farmers, well, they can get a lot more work done in so much shorter time. Electricity on farms has been a tremendous help, too, and, of course, added a great deal more comfort to farm living. Goodness only knows it's been a godsend to farm wives. They've really had a chance to get out from under a lot of back-breaking work.
Speaking of new machinery, Carl, I remember when I was a boy, you used to see these threshing rigs around. You don't see those anymore, do you?
No, you don't. They're pretty hard to find. The old engines and separators, they're pretty few and far between these days. Now we have combines, of course, and we have corn pickers and potato diggers and all kinds of mechanical equipment to help in the harvest of the crops. And of course, they save an awful lot of time and work. Drive through the fruit area here in the southwestern part of Michigan and see all the new spray equipment and all the tools that are used to take care of and also to harvest the fruit.
Well, Carl, I'd like to bring up a point right here. I remember reading a number of years ago of a mechanical revolution in the field of agriculture. Now, to all these things that you've been talking about, hasn't the emphasis been bringing these improvements right down to the small farmer rather than making them possible just to the big farmer?
Well, that's possible, although I think that the effort and the real developments have been speeded up in the last few years, probably, well, two or three reasons. The first place, because of the need of increased production, and a very, very important point, that farmers have had the money to buy mechanical equipment. That has been a very important factor and angle in all this increased production.
Well, we used to have the combine years ago out on the western plains, but now the small farmer has a combine.
That's right. He has a lot more in the last few years. His income has been such so he could afford to buy a lot more mechanical equipment.
Well, now, has there been any improvement in livestock along with these mechanical improvements?
Well, Doctor, I suppose that improvement in livestock is one of the most dramatic factors, as any at all, in this whole food picture. Selective breeding programs have developed better producing dairy cows and heavier laying chickens, swine that have larger litters and pigs that grow faster. New breeds of hogs have been developed that provide more lean meat and less fat. New breeds of cattle have been developed that can stand hot weather and make use of pretty poor forage. For instance, down the southern part of the country, they're using these Brahma bulls that they've imported from the Far East, and they're crossing those bulls with some of our domestic breeds, and the cattle that result from that cross are very rugged. And the result is that down south, there's a flourishing cattle industry started in climates that heretofore, well, they just couldn't raise cattle. The domestic breeds couldn't stand the humid climate. They were troubled with all kinds of insects, and it just wasn't economically feasible to raise many cattle down there. Well, that same principle used in the development of hybrid seed corn has been used in animal breeding, too. Milk cows with hybrid vigor produce more milk, and science have found out that they can breed bees so that, you can buy a batch of bees that will do a particularly good job on clover or any particular type of blossom that you want worked on. That could be, possibly, quite a boon to the fruit industry.
Anybody tried to take out the stinger?
They've perfected these bees so they don't sting, too.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, anyway, the progress that's been made in improving livestock and crops, it's really a fascinating story. And, gee, we could go on here for an hour just mentioning a few more of these things. They're just innumerable.
Well, all these things you've been mentioning are just the beginning, too, I suppose, of greater developments that are around the corner.
Well, now, that's the point I have in mind. I believe that ways of producing farm crops will be worked out so that yields from crops and livestock will be much greater than we have at the present time. In my own mind, there's just no doubt about that. And all this advancement in farming methods can be a wonderful thing if we have the ability to handle it. That is, to handle the results of these scientific developments. But here we are again with the farming industry functioning at about 35% greater than it was 10 years ago. And what are we going to do with all this stuff that we grow and raise? It seems to me that that is a big problem that is facing farmers here in Michigan and everywhere in the United States.
Well, we all know that the needs for food in Europe aren't going to keep up indefinitely. In fact, I understand they are starting to fall off already. The countries in Europe are beginning to get on their feet, and anyway, they're more anxious to buy machinery and industrial equipment for us than they are food.
That's right. And when that foreign market dries up, we'll just have that much more farm produce to get rid of in this country, unless we revise our production plans and goals or increase consumption greatly. And even though our current level of employment continues high and population trends continue upward, we're still able to produce much more than people can buy and consume.
Mm-hmm. Well, now comes the $64 question. What's the answer?
Well, that's what a lot of people are wondering. The government, that is the federal government, has several plans for dealing with this situation. One now on the books, called the Agricultural Adjustment Act of 1938. That's the one that was passed by the 80th Congress.
You mean the 1948, don't you, Carl?
Yeah, 1948. That's the one that was passed by the 80th Congress. It was worked out by Senator Aiken and Cliff Hope of Kansas. That particular act provides for a more or less tapering off of government support prices for farm products, particularly when supplies of these get quite heavy. In other words, the government promises to support prices of several basic farm products at 60 to 90% of parity, but the percent of support falling to the lower limit as supplies of these crops get large. In addition, plans are being made to store tremendous quantities of wheat and corn. Well, the latest idea, and one that will get a great deal of consideration from now on, is one proposed the other day by Secretary of Agriculture Brannon.
Oh, yes, we're all interested in that one.
Well, it provides an entirely new approach to handling the situation. Under Mr. Brannon's plan, the government would not attempt to hold up or put a floor under market prices of food to make up about 75% of the farm output. Instead, it would allow prices to move freely in the market. In times of big supplies of most items, prices would drop below the present levels, and the farmer would get government payments to supplement money he received from the sale of his products. Now, the aim of the present farm program is to give each unit of a commodity the same buying power it had a few years ago, back 1909 to 1914. But the aim of the Brannon plan is to underwrite farm income at a level that would give farm commodities a collective buying power at least as high as they had during the preceding 10-year period.
Well, now, that would make it possible to buy things cheaper for the consumer.
Right, and that's a very potent part of this whole deal. It's pretty early to judge what might happen as far as this new program is concerned. It's got a lot of political oomph to it, despite the new methods, the extended controls, and possible cost. It will draw a lot of labor consumer support because it does cut the price of food. Were you going to say something?
I was just going to say, labor and the consumers would probably support it because it would cut the price.
Right, right. But of course it will draw plenty of fire because of the controls and the cost.
Well, now, is it going to cost any more than the present plan?
Some people think it will cost a lot more. The secretary hasn't worked out an answer to that question yet. The way we've been spending money for potatoes that we haven't been able to use, if that's any criterion, I would say the new program wouldn't cost as much. Well, I've mentioned these farm programs very hastily because government programs have had such far-reaching effects on farm income and production patterns. And I believe that we can be quite sure that some kind of government regulation on farming and assistance to farmers will continue, probably becoming stronger and more rigid as the time goes on. That certainly seems to be the current trend.
All right, Carl, our time is up now. I'm sure that what you have said has helped our listeners a great deal to understand the farmer and his problems. Next week on Western Michigan at Work, we're going to have a look at the job of the social caseworker. Now here's your announcer.
You have been listening to another broadcast of Western Michigan at Work, a feature presented each Tuesday evening by WKZO as another of its many programs in the public interest.